the cost of Ebola, hurricanes, and volcanoes.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a global perspective on business and the economy. The World Health Organization has increased by sixfold the amount of money it needs from world governments to fight the Ebola virus in Africa. Russell Padmore from the BBC's business desk in London is following this. Morning, Russell.
David, morning to you.
Give me a sense of what the World Health Organization calculates it needs.
A significant sum of money, David. More than $430 million is the WHO's latest estimate. If you compare that $430 million it now says to fight the outbreak of Ebola with what it previously said, $71 million, you can see that a significant sum of money is being put by to help fight this outbreak of this deadly virus.
At a time that, from a macroeconomic point of view, this outbreak is really weighing down the countries affected.
Oh, it certainly is, David. And remember, too, the World Health Organization is putting the money by to help the very beleaguered situation that a lot of the healthcare systems are in, particularly in West Africa. 240 healthcare workers have actually been infected from this virus and died. And when we look at the wider economic impact of it, you have airlines cancelling flights. You have countries in the region closing their borders. We've had cases in the DRC reported. And remember, East Africa's on standby, too. And I think there is a feeling now outside of Africa, particularly in the US and Europe, we could find ourselves with cases of Ebola from people who've come in on flights from the region. Suddenly, it seems the world has woken up and the World Health Organization is recognizing the fact it needs to put a lot more money by to fight this outbreak of Ebola.
The BBC's Russell Padmore following this from London. Russell, thank you.
David, thank you.
Again, the WHO draft number is $430 million to fight Ebola. Interesting comparison that happens to be precisely what it costs to run the U.S. federal government for a single hour, $430 million an hour, $3.77 trillion for the year 2014. 9 years ago this morning, a big storm was creeping west across the Gulf after smashing through Florida, its name Katrina. Since then, we've not had a gargantuan hurricane. If you define Sandy as a superstorm, not a hurricane, and you regard Irene in 2011 as awful but not gargantuan. Marketplace's Scott Tong has this update on where this leaves the insurance industry.
Katrina was the costliest disaster ever for insurance companies. They paid out more than $40 billion. Since then, it's been pretty calm as catastrophes go. But here's the paradox. When the sky is clear, insurance prices can fall. Here's David Bradford of the consultancy Advisen.
The insurance marketplace had gone through a pretty severe soft cycle, really for about the last 10 years.
In general, lots of surplus money and insurance coverage is chasing customers. It's a buyer's market. And don't cry too much for the insurers. They have plenty stocked away, says Greg Knappick at Wells Fargo Insurance.
They've built up sufficient reserves and can swallow large losses at this point fairly well. You just don't want to have too many of them.
And we have moved into this year's big storm season. Knappick says it would take a record $50 or $100 billion event to shake up a crowded market. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Now let's check the numbers live. The 100-share index in London is up 0.3%, playing a bit of catch-up coming off the holiday Monday there. The German DAX, which was open yesterday, is down 0.2% today. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up. The price of crude oil up with the Texas benchmark at $93.58 a barrel. Volcanic rumblings in Iceland have raised fears of a major threat to air travel across Europe. 4 years ago, an Icelandic eruption grounded thousands of flights, costing several $1 billion. Eyjafjallajökull, I learned to pronounce it. But our Stephen Beard reports there are reasons to believe history is not about to repeat itself.
For more than a week, the Bárðarbunga volcano has been stirring. Boiling lava has reached the summit and is melting the ice cap. Icelandic seismologist Martin Hench says a major incident is possible.
In the course of these events, we cannot exclude that an eruption might take place in the near future.
And here's the reason for concern. When this volcano erupted in Iceland in 2010, spewing huge quantities of ash into the atmosphere, large parts of Europe's airspace were shut down for 6 days. Millions of passengers were stranded. Colin Brown of the Institution of Mechanical Engineers says jet aircraft are vulnerable to volcanic ash.
Because you're sucking in huge amounts of air, you damage the engines as a result of accumulating ash inside them. The aircraft is going to come down if all of the engines were affected in that way.
In 2010, the rule was, if there's any ash in the sky, you don't fly. But today, the rule is less restrictive. Volcanologist Dave McGarvey says weather forecasters with advanced radar are now much better at tracking ash clouds and steering planes away from them.
We can now fly where there's ash in the sky. The restrictive flight rules have gone. And with the experience we've gained from 2010, we would have a much better clue and much better idea.
He says even if it does erupt, Banda Bunga will not cause the chaos of the 2010 volcano.
Nothing like the scale of disruption, absolutely nothing like it.
And nervous flyers can perhaps derive some comfort from the fact, as Colin Brown points out, ash has never caused a fatal aircraft accident.
Even when they've flown into these very high densities where you actually abrade the outside and scratch the windscreen so the pilot can't see out, we have never managed to bring an aircraft down because of volcanic ash.
He's not calling for a further relaxation of the flight rules. He says no one wants to be in the first plane brought down by a volcano. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And before we go, another in our running series that correlation isn't always causation. A working paper from sociologists at New York University finds that tall guys get married earlier and short guys have longer-lasting marriages. The shorter men also tend to marry people who have less education than the tall guys marry and tend to be the one in the relationship who earns more than the spouse. The research suggests that shorter guys, in a sense, compensate for height by earning more money. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.